ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham, it's Brian behind the glass, and it's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Monday edition of the Bees. Paul and Joe are talking about fire drills, and the Killer G's went 2 minutes long.
A shocker. Joe on air can't get enough of himself.
Dang. Shots fired.
Well, because Joe, this is 2 weeks in a row now that Joe takes shots at the Bees. Now he's not one of us. And then Paulie just decides to, like, be the friendly new co-host going, screw them. They're whiners. You guys should, you don't need to worry about them anymore.
I didn't even know all that was going on. You told me that he was talking about the fire alarm, or they were joking about it during the go away.
Yeah, because shows. Joe was irresponsible and didn't tell his employees that work under his umbrella, so to speak, about when fire alarms were going to happen. And then they happened during our show, so we had reason to be annoyed. And then he complained about it, that we complained that he had to do extra work.
Yeah. Yeah.
Weak.
Yeah. I mean, there's all this stuff that was simmering, I guess, for years and years of hanging out with the Bees. Anyways, have a good weekend, everybody. Everybody, hi. Blankers,
not bad,
Ryan,
you.
Good weekend. Good weekend.
You did.
Good weekends. Yeah, good weekend. Astros, maybe a good weekend. Who cares about spring training results? It's about form and getting ready to go, right? That's what matters the most. What has been your biggest weekend takeaway of positivity? Most encouraging thing that you've heard, whether it was this weekend, you can go whole spring training, I don't care. What's the most encouraging thing to come from the Astros spring training today?
I'll keep it consistent with my opinions, which I am keeping a close eye on center field. Jake Meyers is 4-for-9. Jake Meyers is actually hitting the baseball. Jake Meyers already looks like, I mean, early on, looks like maybe he can hit a little bit. So I'm keeping an eye on that. It's a positive. It could be a lot worse. So at least he has a chance on his first 10 at-bats to hit 400.
Yeah, it's been it's better that he's doing well than not doing well.
Mm-hmm.
That's good. Did you mention that? Did you say all the doubles? Three doubles in those
four
hits,
too? I didn't mention the extra base hits. I just mentioned he had four hits.
He's been productive offensively, but, like, who knows? Maybe just seeing really bad pitching. You never know. You never know what it's going to translate to once opening day comes around. You're facing big league pitchers. Brian, what about you? What's been the most encouraging thing to you?
I'm going to have to go for the sake of pitching depth, because we've talked, obviously, now for weeks, maybe even months at this point, like different concerns, maybe the different ups and downs this pitching staff could potentially have. And then Jose Urquidy goes out there and throws three scoreless innings yesterday with a couple strikeouts. So if Urquidy, you know, knock on wood, cross your fingers, if he is right and he is his usual high three, just below sub-4 ERA sort of self, then that certainly lengthens the starting rotation.
Yeah, I like that one. That's a good one. He's not tipping pitches anymore, which is always encouraging for a pitcher not to do that. It's not a good thing to tip your pitches. Jose Urquidy figuring out that he was tipping pitches, maybe not tipping pitches this year, and he'll be back to the Jose Urquidy of old. What was your favorite thing, Hive? 713-780-3776, your most encouraging thing. Here was mine, Christian Javier. Here was Joe Espada, skipper, most interesting manager in the world. We know that about Joe Espada. Here was his comments after the performance, as courtesy of Brian McTaggart, another interesting man, after Christian Javier's first outing in spring training.
Javi, you know, I like his changeup against some lefties. The fastball was there, up in the zone to righties and both lefties, so really nice outing for him.
What did you think specifically about that sort of the life on the fastball? I know something he was trying to regain.
Yeah, and it showed. You know, I know he's early in camp, but that's, you know, just how good his body was working. Lower half, you know, synchronized with his upper arm, you know, his upper body, and just how he was working down the hill, and he was hitting his spot. So that was good to see.
Not to overreact on one outing, but Christian Javier is pivotal to the Astros' success, no matter what else happens in the rotation, because Christian Javier at his best can be a top 5-7 AL Cy Young guy. You know, to pitch it deep into games, maybe that can hurt his chances, but at his very best, he's somebody who can be top of the rotation guy. At his worst, he doesn't last an inning in Game 7 of the ALCS. But the two things that stood out to me with what Espada said, life on the fastball, great, because last year he lost some life on his fastball. Up in the zone, he's got to live there. And then the kind of the under-the-radar thing that I heard, Changeups to lefties.
Yeah.
We've talked about a third pitch for Christian Javier. Have something that can just be decent to really set up your other two pitches, which your best pitches are the fastball and the breaking ball.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, that's what's exciting when you start getting deeper into spring training is you heard that with Javier, and we already had talked how the importance of that might do something. The fact that Hunter Brown was experimenting with a slower curveball to kind of offset his fastball and his slider. If they can get command of those pitches, that's how pitchers, either in the case of Javier, find the command and the ability to do the things he's done in the past, or in the case of Hunter Brown, maybe that lets him kind of take that next step towards being an above average pitcher in this league. It's fantastic when you hear those kind of things because, you know, there's bad news sprinkled in along the way too, and some of the things that you hear along the way with all the positives that go on can disappoint you. Yeah, it's for the good of Verlander throwing 60 pitches. It's kind of bad that you hear the fact that J.P. France doesn't look like he's anywhere close to playing Major League Baseball.
Of all the six, though, not to be like a jerk, but I do that so naturally. Of all the six starting, why are you laughing so much at that, Brian? Brian's getting a kick out of that.
You lean into being a heel character at times. I think you enjoy it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't enjoy being a jerk. I don't want to be a jerk. I have a kind heart.
I didn't say jerk. I said heel.
if I could pick one Astros starter of the six that we expected, he'd be the one that I would be like, hey, one starting pitcher is going to miss 2 months at the start of the year. I would be like, J.P. France. J.P. France is that guy for me.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you don't include the guys that are injured because you're hoping that you
get
them back.
The six that you were supposed to have for opening day.
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, Urquidy's the guy that
he is
what he is.
That'd be the question there. But it'd be Urquidy or France.
Yeah, Urquidy's the guy that I was going to say we already have seen kind of his ceiling. But I don't know that J.P. France has a chance to even get to Urquidy's ceiling. We don't know. I mean, he did exactly what they needed to do at a time when they sorely needed someone to do it last year. But I don't know if he's in their long-term plan. So I don't know. It's just nice until you get the injured guys back to have every all hands on deck.
Getting back to the clip we heard there from Joe Espada about Christian Javier, the other thing I heard him mentioning, besides what you guys talked about, was he got into kind of mechanics and how Javier's mechanics were good. He got into very, you know, specifics about what was happening. But that was one of the things I think we saw last year, and it might have been attributed, as you've pointed out, Jeremy, to weight. And he came into camp now losing 10, 15 pounds. Mm-hmm. And his location missed a lot last year. We saw that fastball. Not only was it 2-3 miles an hour slower, he wasn't hitting the very top of the zone. He was drifting just down a little bit where guys could catch up to it. So if on top of his fastball having more life, he's also now, you know, dialing in his location even more, we really could see Javier unlock the form that he's had in the past.
To nitpick that a little bit, just to, you know, be the jerk that I am.
Heel turn.
He walked two guys in three innings. He threw 26 pitches and 16 strikes.
But that doesn't necessarily mean he's not putting pitches where he wants to. Obviously, you're not intending to throw every pitch in the zone.
Sure.
And it's, what, his second start of the spring, first start of the
first.
Spring? First. Yeah, so, I mean, I'm not going to be too overly concerned about, you know, the number of walks to strikes yet.
The holding runners is something I'm also going to be looking at closely.
Sure.
With Javier.
Sure.
They said that two guys stole bases on him and, like, he's really slow to the plate, all that stuff. I don't think that's ever going to change. And that's important with Javier. That's important for any pitcher. Because if you put a guy on and Javier walks a decent amount, all of a sudden it's at least a double. Like, you're walking a runner into scoring position if it's a guy with decent speed whatsoever. And I don't know if there's really an answer for Javier to limit that. If he refuses to add a slide step, which Hunter Brown added a slide step to his repertoire going into the season for spring training, if Javier is not going to slide step, I don't think there's an answer to being able for him to control the run game.
And we already know that with the bigger bases and the limited times you can throw over, that stealing bases and taking second is going to be a lot easier than it's been in the past. But then when you have pitchers that just basically blatantly don't make adjustments and changes to try and cut back on things that you already have tendencies to do, it causes a problem with the fact that, and I'm curious, I understand his pitch count goes up, but can his control get better? You can get your pitch count up, but you still can control the way you walk people, how many guys you give free bases to instead of making them earn it. But, I mean, it remains to be seen as we go forward if he's going to be able to adjust at all.
Yeah, that's something that's of the positivity I've seen. It's Christian Javier being slimmed down, losing all that extra weight he was carrying last year. People got mad at me whenever I said that. I think that they're running, which is good because Fromber looks like he's in better shape too. And the stuff appears to be there for Christian Javier. We know that his stuff plays whenever he has it going. 713-780-ESPN. What has been your biggest positive thing, encouraging thing to come from Astros spring training? 713-780-ESPN. 800-919-3776. Busy show today. We finally saw the contract extension of Matt Chapman, and can it relate to Alex Bregman in any way? Jalen Green went off. He's back. The Wilson Commission, Aaron Wilson, he's not always right, but a lot of times he is. And he had like a report on every single Texans free agent. There's an interesting name that's out in free agency, too, it appears, that could be attractive for the Texans. A mailbag Monday, you can ask us whatever you want to ask us. And Mike Evans is staying put in Tampa. What does it mean, though, that the Texans were not interested in Mike Evans? I know that they never really had that opportunity, but we saw reports that the Texans were not interested in Mike Evans, even if he did dabble in free agency. What does it tell you that the Texans were not interested? But when we come back, let's dive into those Alex Bregman rumors, the next contract and what he was expected to get. I think they've been greatly exaggerated with the latest deal for Matt Chapman. Did that Chapman deal bring Alex Bregman back into play for the Astros? 713-780-3776. We're on the Twitter. Twitch.tv/ESPN975. We're on ESPN Houston on YouTube. Joel's at Pac-Man Joel on the Twitter. Brian's at Sack by BMAC. I'm at Jeremy Branham. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN97.5 and ESPN92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, a few words from my friend Doc Linville. Doc Linville, best in the business at the NeoGraft procedure. I talk about it all the time. If you don't have your hair, you're losing your hair, you're thinning up there. Doc Linville can get it back, and it's not the sprays and the creams and the foams that mask the problem. It's literally getting your own hair back because genetically, as Doc explained it to me, you're never going to lose the hair on the sides and the back of your head, no matter where else you do lose it. And he can take some of that, repurpose it, put it where you need it, and really in no time at all, you see positive results, you see your hair back, and you feel better about yourself. As a listener to ESPN 97.5, you get a free consultation with Doc and his staff. It normally costs $150. All you got to do is go to 975hair.com, set up an appointment. It's absolutely free, and therefore let the process go from there. Ask questions. Get answers. See if you might be interested in being the next in line to get the NeoGraft. It doesn't cost you anything. No signing on the dotted line. No money out of pocket. No commitment. Just getting questions answered and finding out if you might be interested. It's really that simple. He loves our listeners. He's seen a ton of results and a lot of listeners that are happy because they've come to see him. You could be the next in line. Check him out today. Go to 975hair.com.
You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
We asked, what's the most encouraging thing you've seen from Astros spring training? 3209 said, I'm encouraged that even with all the injuries, the Cougs can still score 87 points. Not Astros, but I'm always here for good Coug conversation.
Let's do it. Yeah, I enjoyed the hell out of that game Saturday.
Houston winning in Norman. My oldest kid from Oklahoma, and he was rooting for Oklahoma, so he got a little bit of trash talk, which
really?
he might land on the list. He might land. Yeah, I mean, you know, he's in that stubborn age, being a little honorary type of thing. But he got a little talking to after Houston won that game. There are all the injuries, all three from the same position. Terrence Arsenault out for the year. Ramon Walker likely out for the year. JoJo Tugler, Samson announcing today. Out for the year. They all play the four. Mm-hmm. They all play the four. So the Cougars are pretty banged up there. They'll have to figure some things out. Javier Francis has to play more minutes, stay on the floor. Fouled out in 12 minutes against Oklahoma. That can't happen.
Kind of a relief that Roberts, I was worried and concerned it was more like a sprained thumb or ligaments in the thumb. So to find out if it's only stitches, then he can get through that. He played his tail off.
Yeah, he played with it too.
Yeah. And was using left hand bank shots and stuff to still score points.
Well, he's left handed.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah.
They kept saying on the broadcast he was going to the other hand.
Yeah. Well, he used the right a little bit in the first half.
Okay.
But yeah, he's left-handed. And the stitches were on the – he had seven stitches.
But he literally was playing one-handed.
And the finger. He did.
He wasn't even trying to touch it with the other hand.
He was kind of tentative with it. Yeah, he was. But he still was super effective. But a good win for the Cougs. Cougs number one in the nation, the AP and the coaches poll. Polls out today. Final week of the regular season. UCF Wednesday and then Kansas at home on Saturday. Should be a lot of fun. 713-780-3776. So we finally got Matt Chapman to sign. We've been waiting for Matt Chapman to sign so we could kind of compare and contrast Alex Bregman, Chapman entering free agency a year earlier than Bregman. Chapman I don't think is as good as Alex Bregman, but I think it's close. I think it's comparable.
You and I kind of did the whiteboard a week or so ago where Chapman may be an edge defensively and power, but Bregman, better plate discipline, better hit for average, and the defense isn't that far off.
Yeah, I would agree with that. The contract on Chapman is $20 million in year one, $18 million in year two, $16 million in year three. He has two opt-outs. So I guess he gets the only time he could get an opt-out is after the first year, after the second year. Mm-hmm. You do the math on that, though, and it's $18 million per year for 3 years. Even if we assume that Alex Bregman is a better player than Matt Chapman, which is a fair assumption, is he $5 million better? Is he $7 million better per year? Like, how much million is Alex Bregman better than Chapman? I have it at about five. $5 million better per year than Matt Chapman.
Yeah, if you're going just by what you would average out, what he's had in the last two contracts, I guess it is with the Astros, it'd be around 25 to 30.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, anywhere from 5 to 7 is fair.
Right, but I'm talking about, like, his value to going a team.
Forward.
Like if he played, like, you know, like this year like he did last year, or even if you just take 2023 numbers, how much money better is Alex Bregman than Matt Chapman? I estimate about $5 million. If we assume that it's $5 million, and let's be kind to Alex Bregman, and let's give him the extra year. That puts him at $92 million over 4 years if you're looking at it from a Matt Chapman as your baseline and then adding Alex Bregman $5 million more. So, like, the idea that Bregman was going to get $300 million for 10 years has always been asinine. It's always been crazy. The Athletic had a story today where this is like contract extension season. Like, this is when you see a lot of contracts get done 3 weeks prior to the regular season. You see guys who are pre-arbitration deals. That's why the Killer G's were talking about Yiner Diaz. And who was the other one that they were talking about? Jeremy Pena. Jeremy Pena has even been asked about contracts. Like, well, if they're willing to talk, we'll always listen. So this is kind of this is contract extension season. So they had some candidates that could be extended. Alex Bregman was one of those candidates. The Athletic projects an Alex Bregman extension at 7 years, $210 million. So that's $30 million per year. Mm-hmm. Do you do 7 years, $210? 713-780-3776. What would you do, Blankers? That's would you much. Give him 7 years for
7 210? 7 years is too much in my mind, and $30 million a year. Based on the fact that I think his stats are declining, I think he's on the I don't think that you're going to see. I think, Brian, it might have been a day that you and I were finishing.
What my cash or trash it like last week was based on, I think Bregman's going to sign something similar to Bellinger, which was 3 years, $80 million.
Yeah, to me, I don't mind, and I think that the Astros would definitely probably entertain a 3 year deal. I don't think they're going to even think twice about saying no to a 7 year deal. I think 7 years, based on where he's at, the fact that he seems to be on the decline overall his entire game, but that he's not going to be getting any better. We're not going to see this big spike in production and all that stuff. I think 7 years is too much. I think $30 million is too much. And that's why you're right. When we were talking about Chapman, I was real curious because, you know, the talk was that Chapman was going to get all this money still no matter what. And I was like, I don't know. We'll see. But when Chapman signed that, my eyebrows went up. I was like, okay, wait a minute now. Because now Bregman's hating that. And Bregman's going to have to play his ass off this year if he thinks he's worth a whole hell of a lot more. But if Bregman wants to sit down and look at those numbers as kind of a benchmark and go, hey, like to Jeremy's point, I'll even throw $5 more million on that per year for 3 or 4 years, I'm in on that conversation. But I'm not going to 30 a year.
Yeah, there's no way the Astros would even remotely consider 7 years. I don't even think they'd go to six, which has kind of been their limit on most guys. I think that at most, because he is going into his age 30 season, would be 5 years, and I really even wouldn't want that, especially out of $30 million AAV. I really do think you're looking at something pretty close to what Bellinger got, that 3 year, $80 million. It's probably a little bit less. I think they probably max him out at 25 per year. So let's say 3 years, $75 million. If that is the offer, I would certainly do it on Bregman.
Yeah.
Would the Astros do it? I think obviously contract length would be fine. AAV is obviously a little bit on the high side when you compare it to Chapman, but I'd be willing to go 3 years, $75 million to keep Bregman.
I think they would do that. I think the Astros would do that. Now, it's nowhere near, like, okay, let's play the game here a little bit, because Bregman's going to want way more than that.
Of course.
Scott Boras is cool with his players wanting way more than that, and Scott Boras isn't clamoring for his players to sign early. Blake Snell, still unsigned. Chapman was a Boras guy, still unsigned. Yeah. I think there's
Montgomery
Bellinger
also.
Was a Boras guy, and then that was the Boras four.
Yeah.
The Boras four that they hadn't signed until recently.
Right.
Bellinger, Chapman, Snell, and Jordan Montgomery. Mm-hmm. Two of those guys are still unsigned. Now, that is telling you something. It is telling you that what the players think they're worth isn't the actual marketplace anymore. And you could throw regional sports networks as to the reasons why, one of the reasons why I think general managers just wisening up and not signing 30-year-olds to 7-year deals because it's not smart business. So I do think that Bregman comes back into the Bellinger. I think it's a good comp. I think he's going to make more than Chapman, but showing you the demand on Chapman, I think is going to have an effect on Alex Bregman. Now, the timeline on when the Astros could re-sign Bregman, because they're not going to go 7 for $210. They're not going to go 300 for $10, especially seeing this offseason and what free agents got. If the Astros were to bring back Bregman on a Bellinger deal and a Chapman super deal, it's going to be this time next year. Yeah. It's going to be late February, early March.
Yeah, it's going to be when Scott Boras, because you know Scott Boras puckered a little bit when he started seeing that Chapman wasn't getting the market and that he's got other clients in line. And this takes me all the way back to when it really started to go against the super agents and the super contracts, all the way back to Keuchel, and then he had to scramble. But he has to see that the writing's on the wall, that the teams aren't just throwing out money the way they used to, and they're certainly not doing it for 5 to 10 year deals at massive, you know, losses on the final 3 or 4 years of a return on investment on a long-term deal. And that's got to worry the hell out of him. And that's why I said Bregman, if he's going to change the narrative at all to try and earn extra money, he really is playing for his new contract this season, and he's got to go off the charts.
But absolutely. That's 100% true. I just think the timeline's what's impacted the with Alex Bregman.
And I think
Bregman.
If the Astros say no, I don't think it's because of the years. Obviously, it's not because of the AAV. But if they have to wait to basically, let's say, this exact day next year, March 4th, I mean, at that point, if you don't get Bregman, if you wait that long on Bregman and you miss, then what is your option? Unless you're comfortable with whoever is behind him in AAA, your options are pretty much at that point dried up.
It's the DiVincenzo guy and it's Billy Wagner's son.
Yep.
But you're right. Like, if you're already, if maybe you don't feel like they're there, maybe you already make a move because you're not willing to wait on Bregman until late in spring training.
But I also think, to your point on if we could be here next year or he could be there at about the same time, is because unless he does play his tail off, no team is going to be jumping to the phone as quick as they can and rushing to get Alex Bregman signed for 7 years and, you know, $25, $30 million. Because if he doesn't if he's just the same old Alex Bregman, if he's expecting to break the bank or really get a monster deal, he is going to be sitting here this long next year.
And if he gets the 7-year $210 million, that means he had a heck of a year, and I'm shaking his hand and thanking him for his 2024 and wishing him best in his future endeavors. Because if he plays to that, like, he's probably going to have a top 5 MVP season, and that would be kind of finding the fountain of youth because Bregman hadn't been there in a while. Bregman was 19th last year in MVP voting. He was 22nd this past season. Back in 18-19, finished 5th, finished runner-up to Mike Trout. He's not that same type of player anymore.
But like you always are quick to mention, and it's right. You're not paying him for what he's done.
Mm-hmm.
You're paying him for what he's... And even if he has a breakout year this year, it might be the last one we see because we remember just what you just mentioned. The last time he had that monster year was what, 2019? The Trout year when he was in the running for MVP?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so you're looking at 4 or 5 years ago the last time he did it. If he does it this year betting on himself, I would bet that he doesn't do it again the rest of this contract.
Yep.
New one.
713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Andy, you're in the Hive of the Bees. What's up, Andy?
Yeah, boy, he put a big old mountain on top of his shoulders when he said he looks to have his best year ever.
Yeah.
That's 41 HRs, 119 RBIs, 296 average, and over 1,000 OPS. I don't bet, but I would lay big-time money in Vegas, he doesn't come close to that. Makes me almost think that Boras got him and said, hey, you need to do this, you know, film yourself working, you know, doing all the batting practice he was doing and on social media, and go out there and tell him that you're going to have the best year ever, hoping that the Astros may sign him during the year. But look, there's no, that's 5 years ago.
Yep.
4 years ago, he did that, and he hasn't been there. Look, McCormick was a better hitter than he was last year. McCormick, there's no way you pay this guy $25 million a year for 3 or 4 years. You just don't do it. You just got to, you know, we've let it. How many people have been let go? And everybody, oh, God, we let Correa go. We let Springer go. Cole's left. Charlie Moore, I mean, all these people, and what do they keep doing?
They keep winning, Andy. You're right. They keep winning. No, you're right. I completely agree with you. Thank you for the call, Andy. Andy's a smart guy, too, because he said RBIs, which I'm always a big fan of that. I mean, he's right. Chaz was a better offensive player, statistically, than Alex Bregman last year, depending on if you want to go OPS metric, 842 for Chaz, 804 for Bregman. If you want to go OPS plus, it's basically the same thing. They just average the average hitter to 100. Chaz was 130, and Bregman was 122. Chaz was a better hitter last year. Bregman hasn't been that player since 19. And the year that Bregman had last year, too, is kind of his new standard. 801 in 2020, the COVID-shortened year. 777 in an injury-riddled 2021. But he followed that up with an 820 and an 804. Like, this is who Alex Bregman is. He is no longer a top five MVP candidate.
No, he's not.
And that's okay. That's all right. But you're not going to get 210 for seven. You're going to get Matt Chapman plus a little
bit. Right. I think the only reason that you know they're sitting there looking at this and looking at the Astros trying to get more is because they are going to try and play at the heartstrings. They're going to try and say, for all we've done, the loyalty, and you know, and we want to be here and finish our career here and do the kind of things that you know Altuve is going to do here. It's a business. At the end of the day, he's been more of a roller coaster. Last year, he was tinkering a lot more. Last year, he was changing his swing. He's always going to like be in the video, you know, on the video on the iPad all the time, watching his swing. But at the same time, he was up, he was down. When he found it, there were, you know, pockets where he was really good, and then he fell off for quite a bit too. So is that lack of consistency worth that kind of money in those years? I don't think so.
I think he's a good player. He's an above average player. I would say he's a good player. Like, because with his command of the strike zone, he draws a lot of walks. He plays a really good third base, which is a premium defensive position. It's not shortstop. It's not center. It's not catcher. But it's important. I think Bregman's a really good player. He's not a $30 million a year player. King of Twitch says Chapman screwed Breggy. It wasn't Chapman. It's the market. Like, what was Chapman going to do?
Chapman
not play baseball
this year?
Right? Yeah. It's the market. The market is readjusting itself. Brian, I interrupted you. My bad.
No. My only pushback to what the caller said, like, he specifically said, you know, Bregman's not worth $25 million per year. And maybe that's right. Maybe he's more closer to 21 or 20, and we can argue over the exact dollar amount. But I think the only difference in between what the Astros did in the past, letting guys like Springer and Morton and those guys go, Garrett Cole, and the list goes on, is their farm system in some of those years was more equipped to replace those guys than it is now. And you mentioned earlier in the segment a couple of names that they like at the third base, and maybe those guys are answers, but you're operating with a farm system that across the board from wherever you look at is now ranked in the bottom five, whereas they were ranked much higher when they were replacing some of those other names. So you have to balance, is Bregman worth this versus can we actually replace him by calling somebody up from AAA?
See, because my big thing is when I say he's an above average player, that means he's good. I just don't think he's great. I don't think he's superstar. I don't think he's worth, especially at this point in his career and his age, I don't think he's worth the kind of money that we're talking about here in the 25 to 30 range for the amount of years that he may be searching for.
I don't think he's going to get it, though. And I think that these deals that this offseason have told you that. Maybe he gets the AAV like Brian's contract where Bellinger, where it's a three-year type of deal. But he's not going to get the total value of the even like what we've heard. Like, no, I don't think 310 was ever on the table. I think that was put out there by somebody who doesn't know ball. The 210 for seven in the Athletic, like, that's still extremely high on the range. That would mean that he has to have a throwback the clock type of season in 2023 to maybe get that. But the realistic range now is Matt Chapman plus a few million, maybe an extra year, Cody Bellinger. That is what the market is telling us that Alex Bregman's
worth. And
the ceiling's
25. It's not 30.
I think it could be 30. I think it could be 30 on a short-term deal, yeah. If it's a 2 to 3 year deal, I think I don't know.
I don't think they're going to give him 30 a year.
I don't think so either. But on a shorter-term deal, the Astros are willing to spike the AAV. Where Crane is not going to like love spending is the long-term deal.
Sure,
he doesn't want to put $30 million AAV and be committed to it for years 4 through 7. Bregman has a good year. The market's not there. I could see Jim Crane overspending on the AAV if it's a short-term deal. In fact, Jim Crane did it this offseason. He did it with Josh Hader after they got the news on Kendall Graveman. So I could see the Astros paying the $30 million AAV. A lot of factors. Has to have a good year. Can't fall off. The market isn't going to give him the long-term deal. And it's going to come in late February, early March.
Yeah, and I haven't looked at who else is going to be a free agent third baseman next year. But I'm not going to say I'm going to guarantee, but based on who the names are, there are going to be guys out there that are going to be willing to take a short-term deal in that kind of range that are probably going to be similar type players at this point in Bregman's career. Because that's what I'm saying. He isn't where he once was when he was towards the top of everybody's list as a third baseman, mm-hmm. offensively and defensively. Mm-hmm.
1483, why does MLB not use the technology they use in college to call pitches to stop sign stealing? They do. They have the PitchCom. It's a little different. PitchCom is the little headphone device, and then the catcher punches the pitch into like the little remote control thing. College baseball uses the K-band, so they have kind of
I saw that.
It looks like an Apple Watch, kind of.
It really does.
And then somebody, it's usually the pitching coach in the dugout, they're relaying the pitch, and then they look at the watch. Okay, that's the pitch I'm throwing. And then multiple players have it. Like, you have the catcher, you have some infielders that have it as well. So they do have the same stuff. It's just one's the K-band, and then that's visual, and then the other one is the PitchCom, which is audio.
To me, it would seem, and I was curious why MLB wouldn't kind of eliminate even more. Why wouldn't they go to the Apple Watch as well, too? Because it seems like it would eliminate seeing what buttons the
Boston
guys are
would be playing. A big fan of that. The Red Sox true. Would be a huge fan of the Apple Watch.
But I'm just saying, I don't understand otherwise. It just seems like the way the PitchCom thing falls off all the time. Everybody's looking to see what numbers they're punching or how they're punching it in. This might eliminate a lot of that, and the thing in the hat that keeps falling out. It seems like if the pitcher keeps it on the inside of his wrist on his glove hand, I was watching it on Shin, the College Classic this weekend, and the pitcher just kept looking on the inside of his wrist. He saw the pitch, and they were ready to go.
I think the K-band is better than PitchCom.
I do, too.
I think it is better. There must be a reason they don't. It's probably big business, quite frankly. 3-4-5-1, Bregman had a good year. Let him go. You squeezed all the juice out of that orange. I agree. And then we're not going to read this text here from 4488. Bregman post-trash can banging is not the same player. We're not going to read that. Plus, the timeline doesn't really add up to that. The commission said that the Astros stopped doing it in 17, used it for little itty-bitty parts of 18, and then it was gone completely. Bregman's big years came in 18 and 19. So the timeline doesn't add up, according to the report from the commissioner's office. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Jalen Green, am I allowed to use ham? Am I too old to use the word ham? You know,
I mean, it's part of your last name.
Jalen Green went ham. Can Bran Ham pull that off? Jalen Green went ham. Sure. Jalen Green had the best game that he's had all season, arguably. The Rockets get their best win, of the season. Any chance that this was the start of the turning point for the Houston Rockets? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ocho texting in. Gutsy against all odds win by the Cougs. Shed got most of the glory, but Mr. Lionel Cryer Jr. and Mr. Jawan, I don't know what he said, Andone? I don't think that's his name. Roberts did the heavy lifting offensively. The Cougs impressively overcame an Oklahoma team that played above their own heads offensively. Ocho's usually not quick to a compliment, so that's very complimentary coming from Ocho. The people want to talk Cougars today. We're not going to stand in the way. You want to talk Cougars? 713-780-3776.
I don't know if it was against all odds.
I disagree.
Huh?
I disagree. I mean, I'm a homer, but I disagree. You're without Tugler that game.
What's your favorite your number one team in the nation?
Sure, but no one knew Tugler was going to be out. Like, how are you not against? Okay, I see what you're saying. You're kind of nitpicking the odds thing. You were favored to win. Okay, I get what you're saying. Yeah. I would say it was more, there was adversity. Like, sure, not against the odds. Sure, that's a good point. I concede defeat there. I'll take the L on that one.
There's a difference.
But there was adversity. Yeah. You're right. I agree. But there was adversity there. You know, you're without JoJo. He doesn't play, which, I mean, that loss is huge.
That's big.
He's one of your better defensive players. They have these advanced metrics and defensive stuff, blah, 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 blah. He's like top 15 per minute in defensive efficiency in the country.
Frischilli keeps calling him the best 6-6 guy in the country.
Does he?
But he does the little things. I mean, he's aggressive. Mm-hmm. He keeps balls alive. Even if he doesn't rebound an offensive rebound the basketball, he keeps the ball alive so somebody else can get to it. He's aggressive out there. He's going to be a big loss, I think.
Yeah, I do too. And then you stack that on to the other two guys that got hurt. Terrence Arsenault had been playing backup 4 minutes. Ramon Walker had been playing backup 4 minutes. JoJo's a big. So you're down to two bigs, and then you're playing Sed Lott, who's being pressed into action. Not ready. He's super raw, has tons of talent. Probably wouldn't play this year if you were fully healthy. But you got no choice now, and he's going to have to play. So that's the adversity there.
Roberts got to play one-handed for a little bit.
And then that's part of the adversity, too. And then Francis in foul trouble, a little bit more adversity. So maybe adversity is the better word to use there. You're absolutely right. 713-780-3776. You want to keep talking Cougs, be happy to do that, obviously. Rockets, lost. Or, I'm sorry, Rockets won the other day. Jalen Green went off. I just teased that it was the most impressive Rockets win of the season. Arguably, Junior Bronco says he thinks the three wins against Denver earlier this year were more impressive.
I don't.
I mean, they went into Denver and won a game, too.
Yeah, but Denver defending was kind of just – they had injuries for, I think, two, if not all three of those games. They had at least one of their – they had Murray was out for sure, and they had Gordon or somebody else, and Porter Jr. were out for some of those two of those games. But I think these three games, to win two of the three, one here, one there, and obviously they got one from you, but you had a chance to win that, too, against a team that a lot of people think has the talent to really compete for the West, was great. And Booker – was a complete a-hole. And he was trying to do things. And I love the fact that the honesty of Royal Ivy, I believe, the assistant coach for the Rockets, with Vanessa, came out and said, Booker's mad, says we got lucky at home. They aren't going to do this to us. We're not going to do that to him here. And they're going to make sure of it. Well, you lost two out of three. You lost one in each spot. So they did do it to you. And then you got punked by a rookie because you tried to be tough. You know, you didn't want to fight. You know, Cam went at him, wouldn't back down. And you hear, you know, Nurkic say, oh, yeah, and the kid, we had to teach the kid a lesson because he got a little out of hand the last game. What did he do? He dunked on you? Like, you're supposed to be a veteran team that's supposed to be chasing a chip. Be better than that. I mean, you got shown up.
Did you see the, I don't know this account, but they somehow grab the game audio and then they slow it down and they, like, amplify the crowd mic or the effects mic.
Uh-huh.
And they, like, turn down the broadcasters and then you can kind of hear what they're saying.
Okay.
And all Jalen Green was doing was like saying, no, 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 no. Like he stopped them defensively on that play. And he was like, you're not getting anything, basically. No, 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 no. That's all he was saying.
That's to Beal.
He was saying to Beal. Because he kind of locked him up on that play. And he got a little bit of help at the rim. And then Beal just got mad by that.
Yeah, I mean, you look at it. And then, I mean, karma. Booker sprains his ankle at the end of the game, too, after talking all that mess. And the thing is, the one thing I do appreciate about Ryan Hollins on the telecast is the fact that he will call out bad calls and he will show you when guys are playing dirty. And when you watched Booker in all three of those games, he was constantly grabbing jerseys, pulling, tugging, cheap shot here, cheap shot there, and getting away with it. And Hollins' point was, it's right there blatantly in front of one of the three officials. Call it because it's not part of the game. And then it got to the point where, and now Booker's coming out after the game going, I remember when guys did that to me. All it was we don't have enough of that in the game anymore. I wanted more competition. I wanted to fire them up. Well, you lost two out of three getting fired up. Hope it was fun for you.
I agree with what he said. But
about
if you're
firing
gonna,
them up?
Yeah, I'm cool with that. Like, I'm cool.
Well, you also want to see what a rookie's got, too, right? Challenge him a little bit.
Absolutely. And then sometimes, like, you need that as a player. Like, Michael Jordan exists. Like, mm-hmm. he invented things to have a chip on his shoulder. So I'm fine with that. But then you probably got to win two of three at least instead of lose two of three. So that was the issue there. But Jalen, to me, played really well, obviously. I love the fact that he got fired up. Like, you want to see this consistency. I want to see Jalen Green play fired up from tip-off to finish. Like, that's where I think that he's going to have to do to take his game to that next level. He's never going to be a consistent shooter, in my opinion. Maybe he can work his way into that. He's going to have streaky games where he can explode and hit half his threes and score 35. He's going to have other nights where he's going to go 1 of 7 from three, but because of his aggressiveness, which I want him to, like, adapt, get to the free throw line, score 20, even when you're not shooting well.
That's the key to him maturing as a player, right? Mm-hmm. Understanding who you are and how you can still affect the game. On the nights when the first couple jump shots don't go in or the first couple threes miss, that doesn't mean the game's over for you or you're going to have one of those nights because you're so talented taking the ball to the rack and drawing contact, hanging in the air. And also he can get others involved more when he doesn't have those blinders on and look just only for his own shot. That's how he can affect the game. And if he wants to play defense, that's just a huge plus.
I've seen him play defense more this year.
He's capable.
He's definitely capable. And he wants to. He's a pretty good defender. 713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Robbie heeded our advice. He wants to talk a little Cougs. Robbie, you're in the hive of the bees. What's up?
Oh, I'm happy to be here. Just let me ask you, how do you feel about the officiating? I thought it was atrocious in the Cougs game.
Appreciate the call. Thanks, Robbie.
I'll leave that to you, Jeremy.
I think officials do a fabulous job. I think they're all very good. I think that they all have 20/20 vision. I think that they're all excellent. I think it's the toughest job in the world to do. I know I'm being a little bit silly right now. I'm usually pro officials. Like, from people who do sports radio or just have a social media account and talk about sports, I'm more pro official umpire than most people. I know how difficult that job can be. I thought they were fair. Like, it was a tight whistle.
What I'm trying to think, like, what what calls were...
It was tight. It was tight. It was tight.
But I don't
they
think
weren't
that
letting
anything
them play like
went
they normally
against
play.
The Cougs blatantly that I can remember, except for... I'm
well,
trying to think
I mean, if you have a tight whistle, is not good for Cougars defensively.
But was there a call or two late that could have...
No.
Change the tide?
No, I thought they were fine. I mean, I thought they were fine officials, but they just had a tight whistle,
yeah.
Which is fine. Some,
you're right,
some Cougs are going to have that.
I mean, the Cougs like to play aggressive, and yeah. That's part of the
especially,
defensive mantra.
Especially whenever you're down players. Like, now you don't have the depth. You don't want a tight whistle because foul trouble is going to really hurt you. But I thought they were fine. Most officials do a fabulous job. I'm not anti-official whatsoever. That's very difficult, especially when you have like a Cougar defense. Like, how are you going to officiate that game? That's tough to do. 713-780-37. They had a tight whistle. I will say that. 5433. Keep talking Cougars as much as possible in the coming weeks. All right, we'll do. And then he had a laughing. What is this emoji? I'm not even sure what this emoji is. I've never seen this emoji. It's like an emoji smiling and showing off its grill. Is that special? I've never noticed that. All right, 713-780-3776. Let's get to the question. Was this the turning point of the season for the Rockets? Any chance of that? Also, the general manager. Has Rafael Stone been a success or a failure this year? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Guys, before we go to the break, you got games on an NBA docket tonight. You've got college basketball just about every night. You got sports galore all the time. And if you want to put some money down on it, the only place I tell you to do it is mybookie.ag. Because mybookie.ag is the best in the business, in my opinion. Been in business for over a decade. They ain't going anywhere. So neither is your money. It's safe and secure. It's in your account. And because you listen to us and you use MyBookie, you can reap the benefits. Use our promo code BET975 whenever you see an opportunity, and you can cash in. You can cash in on things. If you get a friend to sign up, you get a bonus. If you reload your account, you get a bonus. If you sign up for the first time, you get a bonus. And those bonuses can be used in games and in the online casino to where you have a chance to have more things to bet on, more chances to win, and more chances to cash in. It's fantastic. And I mentioned that live casino. When there's no games going on, you can still go to mybookie.ag and have live dealers that are waiting for you for things like blackjack, poker, roulette, all right there from the comfort of your own home. You don't have to drive to the casino. You don't have to deal with all the parking and all the prices and all the other things. You just sit there in the comfort of your own home, and you can gamble with casino games as well. Check them out today because you are going to be glad you did. And always use our promo code BET975. As I always tell you, bet anything, anytime, anywhere with the only place I tell you to do it, mybookie.ag.
Coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
He's Blank, I'm Branham. 713-780-ESPN. HRP listener line. Rockets winning at Phoenix. Can this be their chance of a turning point to try to save their season if you feel like they're playing or bust in 2023-24?
I don't think you and I feel that they're doing that anyway. I don't think they're playing or bust. And I think time's running out on the rest of this season. Though those were good wins. I mean, to beat a team of that caliber, those are definitely feathers in your cap during a season that has been so up and down. But I don't think they have to do this. And I think that, you know, I'm steadfast in the belief that there's the best way to still make this team better is to not fight for the play-in. I mean, obviously you want to win every game, but it would be better suited long-term if you not only had the Brooklyn pick, but if somehow there was a way to hang on to your own for one more season. Now, whether you trade it, you use it, you've got the chance to add two more quality assets to a really good young roster that is going to be very, very enticing to other teams and for your own team if you just choose to stick and pick wherever you get.
Yeah, I'm pro-tank, obviously, but I do understand that you're at the mercy of the lottery ball, so I'm kind of like, whatever. Like, however the season plays out, it plays out. If you lose a bunch of games down the stretch and you increase your odds to be a top four pick by 5%, outstanding, great. If you make a run to where you're in must-win games with two or three games to play for that 10th spot, okay. Like, just take the season where the season goes. Now, to answer the question, no, I don't feel like this is a chance for the turning point. The one caveat is the Rockets do have, like, the fifth easiest schedule in their remaining games. They're 26 and 34. They played 60 games. They have 22 left. But the teams ahead of them, like, who are they catching? The Lakers are six games ahead of them. Nope. with 22 games to play. Are they catching the Lakers by six with 22 left to play? Nope. I don't think so. Golden State, they're six ahead of you with 22 to play. Are you catching the Warriors? No. Dallas, they're a game and a half ahead of those teams. So if they're a game and a half ahead of those teams, you're looking at 7.5 back of them. You're 8.5 back of Phoenix. Who are you catching? So even though you have the easy schedule, even though it's great you got this win at Phoenix, just the sixth road win of the year, it's great that Jalen Green played well. The answer that I have to the question is this, the turning, like the last chance of a turning point. I don't see the team that you're catching.
You're not. And the thing is, that's why to me it's more vitally important just to figure out who a lot of these guys are going to be. Will the real Jalen Green please stand up? We've been here already throughout the season multiple times where he has a game like this or a heater for a couple of games, and we think, oh, this is the breakout point for Jalen Green. Now we're asking, is this the breakout point for this team? And the thing is, I just want to see what all these guys are going to be. I mean, not just Jalen Green. You're still trying to figure out Jabari, though he's had more consistency. The double-doubles are nice, and we kind of know that he's not going to be in the running for a superstar-type player, but he could be a really good player in this league, and you want to see that continue to develop. Alpi's been up and down but had a breakout season. I think you've seen enough to know he's already one of your key pieces, superstar or not, depending on how you label that. You're waiting to see what Amend can be. Let's see more of him. Let's not worry about trying to make the play-in game. Let's see as much of him and maybe not as much of Holiday so that you can figure out who he can truly be. Cam Whitmore, same way. Tari's now out for the year, so now there's a spot in the rotation that you don't have to worry about getting a young guy more run. But there's still I want to see more of Dylan Brooks to figure out if they overpaid or if this is who he is and they just had to spend money and they got a guy that's who he always was in this league.
I don't think anybody's saying that. I want more of Dylan Brooks.
No, I got to see who he is.
I think we know who he is.
He's a veteran, though.
But can he get better? Can he just get back to being more effective instead of a chucker?
I think he is who he is at
and
this
an instigator.
Point.
No.
Then they grossly overpaid and they swung and missed.
Yes.
If you don't mind, let me take this another way, though, because I'm with you guys. The amount of games they trail the Warriors and the Lakers, you know, most likely unless the crazy happens means they don't catch them for a playing spot. But what you're starting to see, and Joel, you ran over a lot of it there with the double-double games for Jabari. Jalen Green maybe had just his best game of the season. Shingun's been good all year. Amen Thompson has had a really strong stretch over this last month. Could this maybe be not the turning point necessarily to make the play-in, but the turning point where you start to see a team build momentum heading into next year and where you start to see the young nucleus, the players you hope take that leap under Udoka, maybe start to be the team that you hope they could be going forward into next season?
I don't need wins to tell me that, though.
No,
be competitive.
The type of play.
Like we talked a lot about this when we were talking about the Texans under Culley and the Texans under Lovey, and it's like, well, you want to win these games for the young players, and it's like, I disagree. Like, what's the difference between four NFL wins and six NFL wins? You're still bad. Like, you're still not good. And then does that momentum in week 17 and 18 with a largely different team and a totally different coaching staff, not the case with the Rockets, is that going to carry over into the following year? No, it's a myth. Same thing with the Rockets. Now, they're not changing coaching staff, and I think for the most part they're going to have a lot of their same players back. Maybe they look to add another star. I want Jalen Green back. I want Jabari back. I want Amin back. I want Alpi back. So I'm not really a huge proponent of trading, making this big trade in the offseason. I think you're a year away from that. But I don't think winning an extra two games in your final 22 means you're going to have a better next season. Now, where I think it comes into play, like you were talking about, is the development, the growth. Mm-hmm. Can Jalen Green – and Jalen Green's not going to have a great shooting night every game. It's more mentality. It's more maturity. His demeanor. It's his maturity. Be aggressive. Like I think the fact that he got ticked off yesterday, whether it was the fact that they had been chippy with Phoenix, whether it was the Bill deal, whether it was the Booker deal, like the fact that he was ticked off and played with a little chip on his shoulder, excited me.
Showed like he
needs to have that chip every single game.
Yeah, instead of dobber down, body language, not going my way, so I'd rather hit the highway. I don't really like it when it doesn't go with me, and I'm not interested in sitting down or being a six-man kind of talk. Instead, you see a guy that actually can be fired up. He has a fire in his belly that can be ignited, and you like to see it because that was one of the questions. How much does he really care? He loves the attention. He loves the endorsements. He loves the kind of off the court stuff that gets the hype, but can when it comes down to brass tacks when he's on the floor, can he get dialed in and go, you know, and show everybody that he can do some things on the basketball court not a lot of guys can do? And from an Udoka standpoint too, Win games on the road. Figure out why there's such a differential between home and road and try and fix that. Make sure that they stay to the system, because in the last couple of weeks when they've been getting beat on the road and embarrassed a little bit more, they don't play the same kind of basketball they were playing early in the year when they were consistent and more successful.
Yeah, just give me that added. And you're going to have one for sevens. I just like the aggressiveness, and I hope that – and, like, that's part of Ime. Like, these guys aren't going to grow all in 20 games. Like, for some guys, it's going to take a year. Maybe for Jalen, it's going to take a year. But if you get more – and, again, not because you're not going to shoot like this every night. But if you get this type of Jalen Green, it's like, okay, all right, there's that all-star guy I see in Jalen Green. It's got to be
and
demeanor.
And then you can start putting together the pieces going, well, Amen's my point guard of the future.
Yep.
And with every time he gets more minutes on the floor, he seems to do something positive with him. We've seen already a totally different Alpi to realize he's going to continue to develop. He's never going to be great defensively. But if he's a double-double for you and he's another offensive weapon that can facilitate offense – he's a bonus. Tari looks like a good role player. You know, coming off the bench, a six-man type guy. You've got guys and Jabari that you just want to see develop so that you know, do I have to do what Ime wants me to do and go find another veteran like superstar and try to put guys together? Mm-hmm. Or do I have enough in the room to keep building here going, I can be like Oklahoma City and other teams, and if these guys continue to develop, we're going to be fine with what we got.
You talked a lot about the players there and the roster build. Yeah. Danny LaRoe of The Athletic covers the NBA. He has Stone third place in his Executive of the Year voting right now. Do you think Stone's season has been a success or a failure?
I don't. I don't think it's been a success. I think it's a success because you hired the right coach. But as we looked at Casario, you hired the right coach after hiring the wrong coach. And to me, it goes to something we were talking about in this segment. It's like a Dylan Brooks type guy. There were one and two other veteran guys you could have brought in here that could have been the same kind of guy as Dylan Brooks, but probably give you more positives than what Dylan Brooks gives you. And then you gave him more years and more money than any team in the league seemingly was even close to offering him. And I don't think that's the move of a wise general manager. I know that there's, in talking to guys in the league, this is one of the most sought-after general manager jobs right now because of all that infusing of young talent and because of what they might be able to do and because they have resources to work with. He's got to do more with what he has because he's either in the final year or close to the end of his contract. To get a new contract, I think he needed to show me more.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird year for him to have his contract expiring because I don't mind that he wasn't uber aggressive in terms of like the trade market because like I want to see these young guys under Ime Udoka. The free agents, like maybe he was kind of handcuffed into signing these guys. Like he's got a coach that's saying, I want veterans. These are the veterans I want. They had to spend money. I would have liked a different alternative. Like, yeah. I don't love that Brooks has 4 years. Van Vliet, like, has two, whatever.
He's movable, too. I think he's movable. It's still kind of high.
It's just a weird year for his deal to expire. Yeah. Like, because the build's not done.
It's not even close.
So I think that it's been a successful season for Rafael Stone because it's like it's a stepping stone. Like, it's a building block year. But from a Fertitta perspective, it's like, do we want to extend this guy whenever we're still far away from the light at the end of the tunnel and it's still a build? Like, it's a very weird time for his contract to expire.
And if they're in, quote-unquote, phase two, as they put it, that's when you move on from the kind of, like, Stone has never had any basketball experience in the past. He's never had any GM experience in the past. This was his first gig. This is when you go to phase two and start getting really good NBA general managers and guys that have been there and done that to say, time to take me to the next level as a team. Tillman's going to want and demand more, and you might need a different guy that's been there before to do that.
713-780-ESPN. Do you think Stone has had a successful year? 713-780-3776. Also, the Wilson Commission. Aaron Wilson, when he reports on text and stuff, he's usually right. He's more right than he is wrong. He had a report on just about every Texans free agent. What do these reports tell us, though? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.